last word on Today FM.
We trending, we have Orla Ryan, news correspondent with the journal.ie, and Eoin Tomás McDermott, MD of the Communications Clinic. But before we hear from either of them, let's hear from the man who has made possibly the greatest comeback since Lazarus, Donald Trump.
But it's a political victory that our country has never seen before, nothing like this. I want to thank the American people for the extraordinary honor of being elected your 47th president and your 45th president. And to every citizen, I will fight for you, for your family, and your future. Every single day, I will be fighting for you, and with every breath in my body, I will not rest until we have delivered the strong, safe, and prosperous America that our children deserve and that you deserve. This will truly be the golden age of America. That's what we have to have. This is a magnificent victory for the American people that will allow us to make America great again.
And those of us who might regard him as a criminal, a liar, misogynist, a whole list of other things, do we all just have to suck it up now and shut up on the basis that he has been duly elected by a majority of the people in the United States?
I mean, he won the election fair and square. He won the popular vote. He won the Electoral College. He got 295. He only needed 270 Electoral College votes. So it was a very comprehensive and resounding win. I was up overnight covering it for work and was live blogging, and I was saying to Eoin just before we came on air there, at no point in the night did it look like Harris had a chance. From very, very early on, it was clear that Trump was going to be re-elected, and we all thought it was going to be closer. Certainly most of us thought it was going to be closer. It could have genuinely gone either way, but I think the way in which he won so comprehensively around the country was, I suppose, a little bit shocking. At no point in the night was there any point of, oh, maybe she can come back. There was a little bit of hope here and there, but from very early on, it was clear that Trump had very, very comprehensively won.
But do we have to bow down to him now?
I suppose that's a good question. We've seen Simon Harris and other people, other world leaders, congratulate him, as you do when someone is elected President of the United States, and they've all said they will work with him. Simon Harris said, you know, we've worked with him before, as has the European Union, but he also said we need to prepare for shocks to the economy, shocks for what will happen in Ukraine, and that we need to put money aside for a rainy day because it will likely have a bad impact on the global economy and possibly, you know, business within Ireland. There are fears of what he could do with our corporation tax and other things like that. So I don't know if we have to bow down to him, but we certainly have to deal with him and, you know, deal with the impact of his presidency and what that will mean in terms of global affairs, tax issues, the economy. So we're all just waiting to see who he appoints to his administration and what that means for the rest of the world.
I like your expression fair and square, because I have deep suspicions about the involvement of Elon Musk, but I'm sure that I'd be accused of being a sore loser for saying that.
I mean, yeah, there are questions to be asked, I suppose, as to Elon was giving away whatever over a million per day
publicity
to
on X.
We're going to vote, and I think that's one of the big things. I mean, people perhaps on the Democratic side were relying on the fact that typically younger male voters don't come out to vote, and older female voters do, and they were saying in this election in particular, plenty of older female voters did come out, but lots and lots of young men came out for Trump, and part of that could be put down to Elon Musk, could be put down to, you know, Joe Rogan, all of those people who target young men, and clearly it worked.
Yeah, listener says, where is your impartiality as a journalist? The man has won the election, not denying he won the election, not amongst those who's an election denier at all. The result is a result, just like it was in 2020. But is it the case on Tomás McDermott now that those of us in the media and others have to back off pointing out what they believe to be true about Donald Trump simply on the basis that, well, he's the winner?
Well, he is the winner, and you described him as a misogynist and had other titles for him, Matt. But I suppose maybe over the last decade, you and I have spoken about him, and one of the phrases we use is actually that he's a very good salesman and that he has been consistently good. None of us may actually like what he is selling, but there is a significant proportion of America, and as we have heard, middle America, who are buying what he is selling.
Oh, sorry, do you know who used to regularly call him a con man and a bullshitter and a bullshit artist? Elon Musk. If you read the brilliant Elon Musk biography by Walter Isaacson, he's directly quoted telling Isaacson those views of Trump, which all changed when it suited Musk to change his mind a couple of years ago.
Well, Elon Musk is in it for Elon Musk, perhaps, no matter how Donald Trump may be in it for Donald Trump. But I do think there is a significant proportion of America who have been left behind, and that there is a cost of living crisis, as we would have heard, and Kamala Harris, just given her proximity to Joe Biden, did not have a compelling argument around the economy. But if you do look at it, women did actually vote for Donald Trump, for example.
Many did.
44, if not 46% of women voted for Trump. That's a significant proportion of it. But that cohort of middle America, rural America, were hit probably in 2008 and were financially whacked. Then they were getting back to themselves in 2018. Then COVID came along and they got hit again. And inflation has hit them hard, with beef prices up considerably, something like 45%. Rents for those who don't own their own homes up 30%. You have milk prices up significantly. And they're feeling a great significant amount of pain. But I think there's a mistake that we make sometimes as well, certainly I do, where you look at America through the lens that if it is similar to Ireland, where it is significantly not. The America that we in Ireland get exposed to tends to be the America of the college-educated liberal elites. They make the TV shows, they make the movies that we watch, and alternatively we get exposed to Irish America, which isn't dissimilar hugely to Ireland. But there is an America out there that has a very different attitude to society, a very different attitude to community, to the social contract, to culture. And what we have seen is the Democratic Party have evolved to the party of the educated liberals rather than the working class. And there is a proportion of America that is being left behind by the Democrats. And Donald Trump, whether we like it or not, has been scratching that itch that they have, where...
Whether he'll do anything for them rather than giving further rewards to the rich.
They're totally disenfranchised. Where they're disenfranchised, where they are without a college education. If you look at guns, they have 2 to 5 guns per household. When you ask them why they have their guns, they say it's there to protect their family, which is a fallacious argument, given that the gun is more likely to kill a member of their family. They only watch Fox. They don't own a passport. They're typically religious. When they get asked them about race relations, they say fine. And in fact, we're talking too much about race relations. What do the Democrats have to sell to that group of people?
Well,
is the question I'm trying to figure out.
Let's hear a little bit of Kamala Harris's concession speech at Howard University in Washington on Wednesday.
A fundamental principle of American democracy is that when we lose an election, we accept the results. That principle, as much as any other, distinguishes democracy from monarchy or tyranny. And anyone who seeks the public trust must honor it. At the same time, in our nation, we owe loyalty not to a president or a party, but to the Constitution of the United States. And loyalty to our conscience and to our God. My allegiance to all three is why I am here to say, while I concede this election, I do not concede the fight that fueled this campaign.
Is there any room for atheists in American politics? Because everyone cites God.
Imagine if she was also an atheist as well as being a woman of colour and a woman. I don't think America could have handled that. So I think it's interesting the points that Owen was making there. And just to pick up on that further, like Bernie Sanders, I think he summed it up well in that he said it's no surprise that the working class have abandoned the Democratic Party, because the Democratic Party have abandoned the working class. And I think, you know, Kamala Harris, while in some ways she ran a good campaign, mm-hmm. We've had a lot of think pieces this week saying that it essentially repeated Hillary Clinton's campaign in terms of trying to, you know, win over more educated, higher earning Republicans rather than the working class.
It was also a very interesting thing that a lot of the exit polls looking at why people voted the way they did identified the economy as the top item, despite the fact that I mean, I understand entirely what Owen is saying about the economic benefits, the perception that they're not being shared. But the American economy is performing better than any major economy in the world and has done so during Joe Biden's time, except the Democrats didn't campaign on that and were unable to actually show that. But the second thing that came up was democracy and maintaining democracy, which you might have thought was a reason for people to vote for Harris. Except when you go deeper, it turns out that there were a lot of people thought that Donald Trump is the one who could save democracy from the Democrats.
It was interesting. If you listen to the rallies, they would almost make the same argument, but, you know, against their opponent. He was saying, I'm here to save democracy and, you know, weed out corruption. And then she was using the same argument. And obviously in the last few weeks, there was a lot of conversation around whether or not Donald Trump is a fascist. And we had, you know, former members of his administration and military officials coming out and saying they believed he is a fascist. And she kind of, you know, went kind of gung-ho on this and kept repeating this. But, you know, polling would indicate that none of that really landed with people. It landed with her base, but it didn't convince anyone who wasn't already voting for her. So I think, you know, there's a lot of questions there to answer from the Harris campaign in terms of not whether or not they made the right decisions. I suppose essentially they must have made some wrong decisions because she wasn't elected and their campaign just didn't land with enough people.
Let's hear a little bit of Joe Biden. Remember Joe Biden, he's actually the President of the United States at the moment, for another few weeks anyway. He asked people in the aftermath of the election to take down the temperature.
Yesterday, I spoke with President-elect Trump to congratulate him on his victory. And I assured him that I'd direct my entire administration to work with his team to ensure a peaceful and orderly transition. That's what the American people deserve. Yesterday, I also spoke with Vice President Harris. She's been a partner and a public servant. She ran an inspiring campaign and everyone got to see something that I learned early on to respect so much, her character. She has a backbone like a ramrod. She has great character, true character. She gave her whole heart and effort, and she and her entire team should be proud of the campaign they ran. Something I hope we can do, no matter who you voted for, is see each other not as adversaries, but as fellow Americans. Bring down the temperature. I also hope we can lay to rest the question about the integrity of the American electoral system. It is honest, it is fair, and it is transparent, and it can be trusted, win or lose.
Bring down the temperature on. Good luck with that.
No, you can imagine now. Donald Trump certainly, when he had his first stint as president, didn't bring down the temperature. In fact, he was turning it up quite a lot. You see, I think, Matt, though, there is a fact that the majority of Americans have now voted for Donald Trump, and the vast majority of white Americans have voted for Donald Trump. This is America in some ways now, that we just have to accept that the ideal of America that we may have is not there. But this, for me, I believe, though, it's there before Trump. Like, we have to remember there was the Tea Party that came out that Trump became the totem of and the ringmaster of. So this goes before Trump. Trump might have ignited it a little bit more, but there's this rooted sense in America, particularly within certain communities, of being disenfranchised, cut off, and that the American dream that they would have hoped to have achieved and that their parents hoped to achieve is getting further away and they may never actually reach it. And in fact, their perception of things is that minorities are skipping them in the queue to get to that American dream. That's very, very difficult now for the Democrats to figure out how are they going to contribute to. And Orla mentioned the Bernie Sanders comments. Like, some of the analysis of Bernie Sanders' rallies was that actually the content of them was quite similar to the content of Donald Trump. The temperature and tone might have been different, but actually speaking to people about their needs, their wants, their hopes, their aspirations, and how they could be minded and looked after, weren't a million miles away from what Trump was saying.
We've got to take a break. Owen Tomás McDermott and Orla Ryan, stay with us. Coming up, we'll talk about that hooliganism in Amsterdam last night. What's the real story of what happened when an Israeli team played against Ajax in Amsterdam? And we've lots of other things to talk about in the week trending with Orla Ryan, Owen Tomás McDermott, and we have our competition as well after this.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Owen Tomás McDermott and Orla Ryan are with us for the week trending. Owen, can we get to the bottom of what actually happened in Amsterdam last night and who was to blame?
Well, it's very difficult to tell, Matt, and it maybe depends on what article you read that will influence your view on it. So to give a very big, quick bit of background, Maccabi Tel Aviv were playing Ajax in the Europa League last night, and over the last couple of days in Amsterdam there have been, let's call it, hooligan fighting. And this afternoon, for example, I read an article on the Al Jazeera website, which had said that Maccabi Tel Aviv fans had burned a Palestinian flag and had been chanting off-colour chants, shall we politely say, in relation to Palestine, and that they had attacked a taxi and they had done this around Am Square. And so really the sense was that the Maccabi Tel Aviv fans were at fault.
They were winding it up.
And that the IX fans and others decided to react to this. On the BBC then that I read, though, that it featured a Maccabi Tel Aviv fan who had been attacked, and this person became kind of emblematic of the abuse that that cohort and that group of people had suffered over the last couple of days. And so it, for me, it was very interesting that we had essentially football hooligans, you could argue, first and foremost, fighting on the streets. But actually then when we look at the subject matter that is being discussed, it became very interesting that actually to find a true source of what had actually occurred, I found particularly difficult.
Yeah, that's very true. I read a number of articles on this as well today, and it very much differed, the angle, depending on what you're reading, as is often the case when it's anything to do with Israel. As Owen pointed out there, you know, there was the burning of the Palestinian flag. There was also meant to be a pro-Palestinian protest close to the stadium, but earlier on in the evening, officials moved it to Amsterdam City Hall because they were afraid violence would kick off. And there were also reports of within the stadium, there was a minute's silence being held for the Valencia flood victims, and some Israeli fans reportedly started letting off fireworks and booing during the minute's silence. So that riled up the Ajax fans more. So there is, you know, obviously you can't condone violence on either side, but there's definitely more to it. There was a lot of goading on both sides, I think, before the violence really kicked off after the match.
Okay. All right, let's move on to other things. There's one listener wants to know, will there be any punishment for the election candidates who got their posters up ahead of the official announcement of the election today? Will they, I wonder, argue that Simon Harris went on the television the other night and said the election would be called on the 29th, and that was the firing of the starting gun? Or is it that they did break the law by putting up the posters before Michael D. Higgins actually formally dissolved the Dáil?
I mean, some people have been very clever in recent weeks, and indeed recent months, of like putting up large posters with their face on it saying there will be a town meeting in this place on this day and this time. Oh, and by the way, I'm running for election. So technically, you can be fined €150 per poster that's been put up early. But
these are straightforward general election posters. Yeah. I saw them near my house this morning, and I also was out in Blanchardstown for a good part of today, and on my way out there this morning, I could see them before the door was dissolved.
Yeah, a lot of them were put up last night or earlier yesterday evening, and obviously the official day they're allowed to be put up is from today once the Dáil is dissolved. So people were a little bit cheeky in that they went out maybe under the cover of darkness yesterday evening and started putting them up. So this happens, you know, every year or every time there is an election. People get out there early. It's not right, and some people will be fine, but other people, I suppose, we've just come to expect it, and that some people are going to put them up a day early.
Oh, and I reckon there's a lot of money been spent on this old-fashioned way outdoor advertising, not just the posters, because bus shelters, buses, electronic screens, these sort of 48 sheet poster sites, the politicians have been very active in those recently, and they are not cheap.
No, they're not, and they are very active, and I think what we'll see is they'll be very active, as I think the technical term is, across multiple channels, whether that is social media or traditional media, or as we're seeing in the more traditional advertising. I suppose when I juxtapose our election with the US election, there's probably three things that I think we should cherish in comparison to the US election. I think we have PRS-TV, which we should hold on to tight, because it sort of helps us avoid kind of binary crazed opposition. I think our media, secondly, tends to be quite balanced, and many people thankfully consume current affairs, and we get from mostly the same source rather than one person that watching Fox News and the other one watching MSNBC. And then the idea of canvassing, which doesn't really happen in America. We actually have access to our candidates for us to hear their thoughts and also for them to hear our thoughts. I think those three reasons, really, we can be thankful for the type of democracy that we have here.
Okay. We maybe leave the election for a little while. Actually, I was interested as well. Something we briefly mentioned with John Gibbons yesterday during the last word on the environment was the outgoing Fine Gael TD Michael Ring suggesting that no car should be able to go over 100 kilometres per hour, Orla, that there should be a speed limiter put on every car brought into the country. And it struck me, if he was standing for election again, I'd say he'd be most unlikely to say that because of the backlash he'd likely get.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose you can speak more freely when you're not running for election. But Mayo, in fairness, it does have the highest number of road fatalities in the country. So it's obviously a massive issue there. It's a massive issue everywhere, but it's particularly high in Mayo. You know, to date, 147 lives have been lost on Irish roads this year. So it's an interesting proposal. I don't know how feasible it is. From the 7th of July this year, EU law states that all car manufacturers, they have to ensure that there's a device on all new cars that basically warning noises or beeps will start to go off in the car if you're going above the speed limit. So, you know, this kind of technology does exist, but I don't know, it can't be retroactively added to all of the cars in Ireland or anywhere else. So obviously it's not feasible, but it could be something going forward that all new cars are set beyond, you know, that they can't be on, go beyond 100k or 120k, whatever it might be. So they are bringing in more measures like this across Europe, but they can't retroactively add it to cars.
One brief one, finally. We've had a lot of fuss in this country about mobile phone pouches for our school children, but Australia is doing something that some people would like to see here, but I wonder if they can succeed in doing it. Could we do it here? Legislation banning children under the age of 16 from using social media, as if it was smoking or alcohol consumption.
Well, it's a very interesting suggestion, and it seems to be coming into law for them. And it was, I think, Stephen Donnelly who compared social media to the new smoking, or as the new smoking. And there is a significant threat with social media. And I do wonder sometimes, will the next generation say, how did you not stop this thing that has damaged so many of us? And what it is, Matt, is in Australia, they're going to be bringing in sizable fines to social media companies for allowing children under 16 to become active on their sites, and that the burden is on the social media company rather than any penalties for the parents or kids. I think it's very wise, because like if you look at quite a lot of the research, it talks about the significant damage that it can have on kids. What was interesting, Meta came out with a statement that said, oh, using our platforms gives kids social skills and helps them relax and play. Well, my understanding of the research says it damages kids' social skills, and it certainly does not help them relax. It makes them more anxious. What was interesting again is where this will fall ultimately in the Overton window, which is the guide of how acceptable political policy will be. And I think it's going to be moving from this is kind of sensible and acceptable to actually it could be popular in policy in Ireland at some point.
I have to leave it there. I'm out of time. Thank you very much, both of you. Owen Tomás McDermott from the Communications Clinic and Orla Ryan from the journal.ie.
The Last Word on Today FM.